From San Francisco to Paris, Nashville to Amsterdam, we're reaching up.
This is John Fass in San Francisco, and we're reaching up again this week with music, some cool wisdom, and special guest Father Malcolm Boyd is back.
How may the heart be taught, Jesus? When a mind is closed and communication has ceased, how may a person be reached? If his heart has never learned to love, or has stopped loving, how may the heart be taught, Jesus?
Malcolm Boyd is an Episcopal priest and a former Hollywood producer before he heard the call and was ordained. A poet as well, he achieved fame with a number of books, headed by his books of prayers, Are You Running With Me, Jesus?
And I remember we were in a kind of a dormitory setting one afternoon, and the others are sort of dozing, and I wrote the first prayer, Are You Running With Me, Jesus? I think on a plane ticket. In other words, I was talking to God in a different way. And God, anyway, the whole different approach to prayer, which Are You Running With Me, Jesus, represented. And so in that book, I connected with, there are a million copies in print in the U.S. and translated into most foreign languages. So a number of people and I got on the same track together with the book, and it changed. It permitted me, and I guess permitted a number of them, to pray in a different way and to look at this whole situation differently, you know? Because, I mean, one prayer that has stayed with me so was a friend of mine was a symphony conductor, and his young son died, and he stood at the grave sobbing, but he said to me, I wanted to pray but didn't know the words of a prayer. And then I had to explain to him that he was praying by standing there, and prayers don't require words. So we're into quite a redefinition of prayer here in a lot of areas.
That was, of course, an era when a lot of young people were asking, why am I here? What's the meaning of life? Is God listening? Is there a God? We were in an era where media was asking if God was dead. And here your prayers are about what all of us wonder about, what all of us see around us. And yet, as you were just saying, they're pretty simple prayers, pretty honest, and pretty direct communication with God, right?
They're honest, and as simple, they're complex and simple. I mean, you know, everything has layers. But there's no requirement of access. It doesn't take a PhD, it doesn't take a college education, it doesn't take a $10 bill. Speaking of that tumultuous time, and you've made reference to the death of God, I remember a funny day. The religion editor of the New York Herald Tribune called me and said, I'm on deadline, I can't talk. But she said, the news just came over that God is dead. Have you a comment? And so the 60s were indeed odd. But you know, it's just as odd now. And people are just as much today asking, is there meaning and is there God? And so the questions, I don't think, ever change. I'm so grateful for my life because I'm 80. So what? Except, of course, thank God there's been a lot of wisdom and experience and maturity, and I'm very grateful for that. I'm also grateful I'm not rigid and angry and that I'm very open and in touch with all the currents of life. And also very aware that at the moment of my departure, I simply continue the journey with God. This is like the hiking I do. This, as you and I are sitting here, just a few hours ago I was hiking. I like to hike alone on dirt roads in the hills. And then, and of course, on the hike, you meet people. So you're not alone. I love the people I meet. Because they're intentionally hiking just as I am. And those of us who are out hiking, we're doing it for the body and the mind and the spirit. We're doing it, we want to do it. And this brings us close to God and to people and to life and to reality. And life isn't the fast lane in the car, and life isn't the fast lane career, and life isn't the, no. There's too much denial of life in much of the way people live. Because a lot of people are trapped and accept it. And a lot of people, you know, won't let God in because, of course, that might mean giving up control. And, of course, they're already in hell. Because hell is where one is in the center of life and there's no room for God. So, you know, life is where God is in the center. And we're not victims and we're not permanently wounded and we understand liberation.
I'm having a ball. And I just want to thank you, Jesus. This is a good day for me. Yesterday I was down, but today I'm up again. These people I'm with are the greatest. The sun has really come out for me. I see everything in bright reds and yellows. I hated the dark reds and the crying blues yesterday. I was mean, Lord, and vicious. And I can hardly understand how anybody put up with me. But they didn't beat me down. They let me know what it is to be human because they stayed human. Now I'm human again. I feel good. And I want to get out with the people and swing with them, Jesus. There's somebody I was mean to yesterday. I want to knock myself out to be nice to him today. Honestly, Lord, thank you.
Back with Malcolm Boyd in a few minutes on Reaching Up Radio.
What's happening with children and youth all over is really tragic. No one home, low self-esteem, alcohol and drug abuse, bullying and violence, HIV infection, school after school, programs being cut. With budgets slashing, it's getting even worse. Find out how you can help. Street Cat's One Heart for Kids campaign. Go to oneheartforkids.com. That's oneheartforkids.com.
This is Don Fass from San Francisco, and we're all reaching up. Back with Father Malcolm Boyd.
One of my favorite stories, it's one of the old ones. The old ones are the best. There's someone in a jail cell. He's been there for years, and there's a guard outside. And then this person in the cell, in a moment of reality, realizes the cell isn't locked and never has been. So the person just gets up and walks out. Well, I'm sorry, but we can do that in a thousand ways all the time. And that is the invitation of God.
I think that's wonderful what you expressed. We were talking before we started the interview. We all know that many people have experiences, certainly young people do, in a church or in a synagogue, and it somehow is not the experience that they expected, or it's an actually unpleasant experience in some way, or some communication with a clergyman isn't what they hoped for, and that colors their walk with God. What would you tell young people about religion versus relationship with God?
It's almost weird you asked the question in the way you did, because you just bring this story up and I would never have thought of it. But when I was young and searching and working in Hollywood, I started going to a church that it was just a part of my search for meaning. And the church was doing some fundraising, and a friend of mine who was Jewish was a songwriter, and they asked if I could get him, if he'd MC the evening and lend his name and that kind of thing, and he did. So that night I arrive, and my friend the songwriter isn't there yet, and the minister, in front of a bunch of students and youth and others, looked at his watch, I remember, and he said, "I knew that damn Jew would be late." Well, this drove me from the church for at least a year. In other words, I got through the evening, greeted my friend, you know, but then I refused the phone calls or letters from the minister because I thought, I'm not here to educate a minister who doesn't know anything. And this was such an invalidation of religion, what he did, so unloving. And then I gradually realized that I was unfair to the minister too, expecting perfection of some sort. A priest, a rabbi, a minister is just another human being with a particular kind of education and a spiritual calling. And so we're all in the church together, and there's no hierarchy, and there's nobody perfect, and there's nobody really better than anybody else. And I think this is very important. And so I learned something there. So therefore, I too got turned off, and took a year or more just to get back on track. So
here I am in church again, Jesus. I love it here, but as you know, for some of the wrong reasons. I sometimes lose myself completely in the church service and forget the people outside whom you love. I sometimes withdraw far, far inside myself when I'm inside church. But people looking at me can only see my pious expression and imagine I'm loving you instead of myself. Help us, Lord, who claim to be your special people. Don't let us feel privileged and selfish because you've called us to you. Teach us our responsibilities to you, our brother, and to all the people out there. Save us from the sin of loving religion instead of you.
Yeah. I think one very important thing we've got to do with religion, whatever religion we're espousing, or church, is give up the perfectionism thing. Don't look for it, don't expect it, don't judge people on it. Forgiveness is important. If I'd stuck around with that minister, it would have been better maybe if I'd gone in and said, "Look, I think that you are the phoniest, lousiest, stupidest idiot. Explain. And then he could say, "Wow, I guess I am the stupidest, lousiest, ignorant idiot. Okay, then where do we go from here, guy?" And then he might have said, "Can you forgive me?" And I might have said, "Well, repentance isn't just forgiveness, but change of direction. Are you willing to change direction? Are you willing to come down off your perch and I'll work with you?" That would have been I would have been far more spiritual in doing that than arrogantly walking away feeling superior. So that story to me is a real important one. And except for your question, I wouldn't have thought of it, you know, while we're talking. But it really cuts to it, doesn't it? Because we all have the obligation, if we're in any religious situation, to be there on an equal basis with the other people, share the responsibility, and if somebody's an alcoholic or on drugs or beating a wife or husband or abusing a child or an older person or whatever, let's work it out here. And therefore, the spiritual life isn't off on cloud nine somewhere. it's related to reality, because it's got to be a part of our lives and a real part. And it can't be a kind of a phony part where we keep our sexuality over here and we keep our money over here and we keep our politics over here, and then we go over there in a fantasy moment of religion. I'm sorry, that's anti-religious. Because what we're talking about is a totality of life, where we're here with God, in the totality.
David says he prays without being aware of it when he paints Jesus. He says this is the real link which keeps him creating and able to function as an artist. Is this true, Lord? Can David's painting be praying? If so, is it possible Richard prays in his social work studies? And Henry when he edits his magazine? Ruth while she types letters? And Stouffer when she cleans people's apartments? Help me to pray that way too, Lord. I want to pray in my doing and being, Jesus.
Young people these days, as certainly in the 60s, and I guess we go through this, maybe we never stop going through it, but if we do, we maybe go through it every few decades. There are a lot of young people who are not very hopeful about what's going on in the world. Wars, which of course we've always had, wars or rumors of wars, people dying of AIDS all over the world, drug addiction, alcoholism, having wrecked millions and tens of millions of lives and families. But a lot of what you've written about, a lot of what we discussed even before this interview, has to do with what we call social justice. And that leads me to ask you, in terms of young people, in terms of what we read in Scripture about faith without works is dead, and my own experience that a lot of Christians seem to think that you can go to church on Sunday, maybe even be in a Bible study, and that's it. That's the end of your walk. What about works? What about social justice?
There ain't no walk without social justice and works. It can be the purest hypocrisy. Very pharisaical, just, you know, I do this Bible study and I'm at this service, and in fact, give me credit, give me a medal, put my name up in lights, you know? And of course, that's only the beginning or even the pre-beginning of the process. The process is surrender completely of oneself to God and to offer one's life in service and social justice in myriad ways. And this is where, it isn't just youth that looks at the global situation and feels a little bit hopeless. Everybody goes through that. But let me point out one thing here, because at 80 I've lived through a lot. I lived through two world wars, the Holocaust, the Great Depression in the United States, where I was hungry as a child. What I'm saying is, as bad as it can look on a given day, history is simply repeating itself, and this is no worse than a lot of things I can remember in my life. I think a kind of fundamental thing about prayer that I believe is that it's not an act. It's not something you kind of turn on and off. Because if you do, you know, when you turn it on, you could be real nice, and when you turn it off, you wouldn't have to be real nice anymore. And I think that's part of the problem. And for me, a real test of prayer is the checkout line in the supermarket, all sorts of things happen there, you know. I think prayer is process, and prayer is kind of the wholeness of our lives. And in other words, our lives need to become a prayer, don't they? And that kind of covers everything. Because then we're not changing from this to this, and we're not real bad here and real nice here, and all that stuff. And we're not treating a stranger badly, particularly one who has upset us. For me, the challenge and the gift from God is the prayer as whole fabric. Because I know my day begins, the very early morning prayer sets the mood and the mode for the day. And that's very central. You know, you're offering God the day, and with specifics. But then you get into the living of the day. And the attitudes need to be very much a part of that ongoing prayer, I think.
What I'm beginning to learn is that the day, no matter what we get out of it, belongs to God anyway, doesn't it?
Yeah, the day belongs to God, and also we belong to God. And also, so do these strangers belong to God. And the role of the stranger is so interesting in faith and literature and everything. And then there are those situations where we are the stranger too. And I think, you know, there's a great deal in terms of the life of Jesus in welcoming the stranger. And that's part of the fabric, the wholeness. Because then the stranger is treated the same way as someone very familiar. And maybe that's as much the core of all this as we can get to. Because the other way, the people who are familiar to us, you know, give them the warm dumplings and the fireplace. But the blizzard and the stranger comes to the door and you're not sure you can trust the stranger and you don't open the door. How's that?
Sometimes we don't even give the warm dumplings to those that we say that we love, and we've got to kind of remember that.
I'm set on fire by who Zorba is and how he reacts to life, Lord. He lives life. He beholds the earth, smells and feels it, and finds it good. I suppose he's no saint. I'm not sure, Jesus, what it means to be a saint right now. I don't think it means to act saintly. I'm afraid that kind of thing is why people are bored with religion. I mean, Zorba is human, Lord. And he does good and bad human things. But he seems to love life, bounces back from disasters, meets other people's needs, and gets involved in their lives and all of life that comes his way. Isn't life for Zorba something to be celebrated as being holy? Do you yourself, Jesus, label some things in life as holy and others as profane? I don't think you do. But so many people who call themselves Christians seem to ignore you completely when they set up their blue laws and censorship boards. Zorba's dance of life is a wonderful dialogue with you, Jesus. Teach me to dance too. Or at least to be free with you. And to understand how newness of life and renewal are stronger than death.
And as a writer, I would say it's kind of impossible, because I think if you're an artist, a writer, a creative person, you've got to be there in the totality, or maybe take up plumbing and forget it. So those were kind of issues. And there was a lifelong struggle in terms of authenticity, being myself. I really hated being a phony, being partial, not kind of sharing my story. And then, or you might say telling a lie. Because I don't see that, that's not productive. So there, so consequently, real relationships were kind of impossible with the people, because how could you have a real friendship if someone is sharing his or her story and you're not going there. So one gift I feel in my own life is that I have been enabled to become an authentic human being. What you see is what you get. I'm me. I believe loved unconditionally by God. And therefore able to make so much more loving sense of life with other people. And that's kind of, I would say, my personal odyssey.
Malcolm Boyd, I want to thank you very much for being with us. I hope we'll be able to have you back again in a few months, because we've just begun to discuss some of these things. Thanks so much for being with us. Thanks so much for your poetry, your writing, your albums, which I hope you'll somehow bless us and let generations hear again. I'm talking about the record albums now, CDs. Thanks so much for being with us here in Los Angeles.
Thanks very much.
This is Don Fass. Join us next weekend and keep reaching up.